Following Pay program is sponsored by Prairie Fire Communications. Opinions expressed do not necessarily represent those of staff and management of WRMN Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Freedom Rings. I am your host, Kenneth John. With me is my excellent producer, Mike. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
Great. Great. Well, it's a pretty good week for Chicago sports, huh?
No complaints here.
Well, I'm glad the White Sox won. It was good to see a Chicago team win for once. So, and what pitching. I knew they had good pitching, but to shut out the Astros.
Yeah, no, they did a lot in the postseason as far as pitching.
Right. Absolutely incredible. And the Bears.
Bears.
They may win the Central Division without a winning record.
It's pathetic, isn't it?
But I'm happy we're on top now.
But we'll take it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy. So, well, I guess Orton had a pretty good day, though. His career high of 200-plus yards, I guess, in the air. So, an improvement.
I just want the Bears to score more on offense than they do on defense.
And it hasn't happened for such a long time.
Oh, I know.
You know, our defense got a ways to go. I hope Thomas Jones isn't that injured. I guess some rib problem.
Yeah.
But
I think he'll be okay.
All right. Cool. All right. Let's move on to the stupid regulation of the week. One of my favorite topics, which is corporate, you could say fascist state subsidization of businesses. And now it's gone not just local or national, but international in scope. The state of North Carolina has agreed to pay Chinese computer maker Lenovo millions of dollars to build a new research and development center in the state. And it just goes on and on. $750,000 grant, a lot more in tax incentives, including income taxes. 73% of those taken off, you know, or forgiven, I suppose would be the word. Lenovo could receive a maximum benefit of $8.4 million. This is for a Chinese company. Where does it end? The whole notion of competitive markets is just evaporating, you know, right in front of our eyes. When you give bigger companies, and now international bigger companies, a competitive advantage in the marketplace through these tax incentives, how is the little guy supposed to survive? And it's just bigger and bigger and bigger, and I think it coincides with what seems to be at least the Republican Party, those in power, what they want is really an international fascist corporate state, which really controls individuals and is to the benefit of those who are within that loop. And folks, it's not going to change. I don't know if I can change and vote Democratic. They'll just have a little different maybe of people will get the benefits. And until if you keep on doing the same thing, you'll keep on getting what you always got. And it's time to get out of that rut and maybe start voting for alternative parties. I don't care what it is. If you're a socialist, vote for the Greens. I don't care. But get out of the two-party mold, which is really one-party oligarchy, fascist, corporate, mercantilist, if you will. All those terms really mean the same thing. Oligarchy. And if you believe in freedom as your core value, heck, vote libertarian. Our day is coming. It may not be tomorrow, may not be the next day, but it's coming. And the more I think people see what's going on with the subsidization of the big guys, I think maybe more the little guys, the average Joe out there is going to come to realize that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats serve their interests. So today we are going to have, we were going to have Mothers Against the Draft, but something happened there. So we got an alternative. It should be interesting. One of my favorite topics is the war on drugs. And we're going to have Peter Moskowitz, who is a former Baltimore police officer who is his campaign's now against what he considers an immoral war against drugs. Well, and not only immoral, but a drug war that just plain doesn't work. It's a continuation of prohibition. So we will talk to Peter Moskowitz after the break. This is Freedom Rings. I'm Kenneth John. The phone number here is 847-931-1410. We will be back after a few messages.
Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats and regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well then, America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Baroni's Pizza, 3 Lakewood Plaza, one block west of Route 25 off of Bessinger Drive in Carpentersville on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
You get what you pay for. Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom tint right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
Hello, friends. This is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings needs your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bass, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including School Reform News, Environment and Climate News, and The Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute and be sure to mention Freedom Rings. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Rings, and thank you for your support. All right, we are back with Freedom Rings. I'm Kenneth John. I'd like to welcome to the program this morning Peter Moskowitz. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You are the head of law enforcement against prohibition?
I am not the head.
Okay.
I'm just spokesman? One of the 3,600 members of the organization.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very good. And you used to be a police officer.
Yes, I was a police officer in Baltimore, which some people may know from the HBO series The Wire. A lot of that was filmed where I worked.
Okay. Okay. And so you saw firsthand the implementation of drug war policy.
Yes, I was working midnight in the ghetto of East Baltimore.
So ground.
It's a neighborhood that's been ravaged by drugs and the war on drugs.
And what did you find there? Were you able to be successful at all in this effort?
No, I mean police normally judge success on number of arrests, and by that standard, we were certainly successful in that police district. We locked up 27,000 people every year, and there's only a population of 45,000 people there. So, I mean, it's an incredible scale of arrests. But does it you know, it doesn't accomplish anything. The murder rate wasn't going down. The drug trade wasn't going down. And clearly the war on drugs is not being won.
So you continued as a police officer until what, around 1994? Or before that?
No, I was a police officer until 2001.
Oh, and meanwhile you're going to college.
Yes, I was a grad student at Harvard in sociology the whole time.
I see.
And wrote my PhD dissertation on my experiences there in Baltimore.
And your dissertation was, yeah, on the war on drugs. And so what did you conclude in your dissertation?
Well, simply that the war on drugs is and always has been a failure. And until we accept that and then try something different, nothing's going to change. But part of the problem is that the true impact of the war on drugs happens. I mean, it happens a little bit everywhere, but most of it happens in neighborhoods that, quite frankly, people just don't care about, like East Baltimore.
Right, right. What happens with the war on drugs, you create this illicit black market.
That's exactly it. I mean, it's the only drug that we have successfully sort of fought is nicotine. No one kills each other over cigarettes. The government's able to tax cigarettes. Usage rates have gone way down. That, if anything, should be our role model, something that we can legalize, regulate, and tax. You can't regulate an illegal product, and that's one of the main problems with drug prohibition.
Absolutely, and it seems to me, I mean, as an adult, I think I'd have a hard time finding illegal drugs, but the schools are filled with illegal drugs.
I don't know who your friends are, but I can't imagine it'd be that hard for you to find illegal drugs.
Well, I said I'm looking for them, but I guess my point is that I think the illicit black market seems to concentrate more towards the young people, as far as I can tell. From what I've heard through the grapevine, if you wanted to find some marijuana, you know, go to your local teenage kid. It'd probably be a lot easier than your average adult. But
I'm a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City now. And I ask my students how many of them, well, of course, I don't expect an honest answer when I ask how many of them take drugs, but the real question I ask is how many of them do not take drugs simply because it's illegal? And none of them.
None of them.
People have reasons not to take drugs, but the law, for better or for worse, is not one of them. And it makes the drug prohibition all the more absurd.
Did you see any corruption going on within the police department vis-a-vis the war on drugs?
Well, no. I'm happy to report I didn't.
Wow.
I was worried about that going in there, going into sort of what had a reputation as the dangerous police district and then working in a midnight shift. I was happy to see that there is no culture of corruption or brutality, for that matter, despite what many people think.
Well, you look at the TV shows and the movies and you think that it's just rampant from the police force.
It's not. I believe the average police officer has higher integrity than the average college student or professor, for that matter.
I'm glad to hear that, because I sometimes wonder.
Yeah, well, that being said,
Well, maybe that's a Baltimore thing.
I'm totally naive to say that there's no police corruption. And whenever there is police corruption, it always starts in the narcotics division. It is an inherently dirty business. I mean, look at any large-scale corruption. One of the biggest in the past few years was the Rampart scandal in Los Angeles. It's always in corruption because, as a police officer, you come across large amounts of drugs and money.
Right.
And you're fighting a war on drugs. You can get no... In most crimes, you need a victim to testify in court. That's what our judicial system is based on. With the war on drugs, however, 9 times out of 10, it's the police officer that is the witness. And, you know, and the state is technically the victim. Because of that, and because of the sort of dismal state of our courts, which are a large part of the game, cops learn how to play that game. And truth is one of the first casualties. So the average... I didn't work in our charge squad either, so I saw no culture of corruption, but every scandal comes out of narcotics.
Absolutely. So what do you propose that we do about the drug problem?
I think we need to legalize everything, and I'm not talking about just medicinal marijuana, though, I mean...
So you think a 12-year-old child should be able to go into a drugstore and just buy some heroin?
Well, of course not. No more than a 12-year-old child can go into a drugstore and buy cigarettes or alcohol today. But there are 12-year-olds buying heroin now, and there are 12-year-olds selling heroin now. And isn't it just too big of a problem to keep in the hands of criminals?
Well, if it's legalized, then it can be regulated at least.
Exactly. And I think what you would find, in fact, is probably usage rates, if anything, would go down. Some of the cachet would be taken out of drug use. But the most important thing to me isn't that. That I do think is a matter for the individual. And, you know, there's no big treatment. There's really no treatment for heroin addiction if you get that. I mean, it's an ugly drug. But it would stop the violence around the drug trade. And that in and of itself would save thousands of lives.
Well, what do you say to the cultural conservatives who point to this thing that you have been to? Amsterdam? It's a cesspool.
Well, Amsterdam isn't a cesspool. I spent a lot of time in Amsterdam. My brother lives in Amsterdam. And I've lived there on and off for periods myself. Compared to most American cities, it's heaven. In terms of crime rates, in terms of drug usage rates. But don't forget, and it might not be too popular on your show, Amsterdam is a tax and spend, you know, liberal city and a tax and spend liberal country. And to a large part, it works. People pay 50% of their taxes, but they get basically safe streets, health care, schools, and sort of all the amenities of a civilized society. Their country isn't perfect by any stretch of the means, nor is their drug policy. But in large part, things work a lot better, and specifically with the drug policy that does not... They're not locking up 2 million people a year, the country isn't. They're not having 50% of their convictions based on drug crimes. It's seen as a health problem, and they fight it as such.
Don't we have more people in prison per capita than any other country in the world?
Well, I can't speak for every country, but every country that we like to compare ourselves with, we're really off the scale.
It's to me, it's an American tragedy, and what a waste of humanity to just to lock them up in prison just because they made the smoking marijuana cigarette. I understand. I know you agree that everything should be legal, and I agree with you on that. But the focus seems to have been lately on just like marijuana possession.
I'm afraid that the various groups that sort of fight the. Well, for lack of a better word, the pro-drugs party, even though we're not pro-drugs, we're
right.
Not the war on drugs, but
right.
I think medicinal marijuana is a bit of a distraction. The fact that it's such an obvious point and yet still enough, politically is not happening in most of the country at least. But I am talking about legalizing crack and legalizing heroin, and the problem is when you just talk about marijuana, you focus on whether the drug is good or bad. And with marijuana, that's, you know, you can debate that all you want. Nobody I know says that crack or heroin are good drugs.
Right.
But that's why those are the important ones to legalize.
Well, how do you propose that society go about legalizing? What would we do? What would be the structure of such a legalization?
You know, I'm open to suggestions. I don't have the complete answer. But anything would be better than the status quo, first of all. I would like to see some regulated system as states regulate liquor and or cigarettes. I mean, you'd have to sell it from the vendor. Whether the people of the state would want it controlled by the state, as, you know, some states control the liquor stores or run the liquor stores, and others just regulate them. I think that can be decided, you know, at individual state level. But the important thing is simply that you've got to get the drugs out of the hands of the people with the guns and the violent culture around it.
We had a lot of that in the 19th, roaring 20s, didn't we, with the alcohol prohibition?
You think we would have learned something about that? There are more than just parallels. There are plenty. Alcohol usage rates end up going up during prohibition. After it probably dropped initially when alcohol was first banned, but by the end of prohibition, people were drinking more than at the beginning of prohibition. And the murder rate skyrocketed. The prisons filled. The rights of individual citizens were restricted. Police were accused of, as you can imagine, this in today's age, they were accused of conducting searches without warrants and a search for that drug of alcohol.
There was a little tip of the hat to the Constitution back then?
That's where it started. That was the First Amendment that limited the rights of citizens as opposed to limiting government, which was a pretty big shift in the use of the Constitution. But also what's interesting is that when alcohol was legalized, again, at least prohibition was repealed, the prohibition agents didn't give up the fight. The first drug czar, in effect, that wasn't called that back then, was a prohibition agent. They just switched their fight from alcohol to drugs, so that zeal for prohibition the zeal that sort of fuels the war on drugs, that's the same prohibition movement that's been around for 100 years. Now, there's nothing new about that, and they've never succeeded, but unfortunately they seem to think there's some value in just in prohibition for its own sake. It's not the effectiveness of the policy they're concerned about.
It seems that whatever program is initiated by government, that there is always a cadre of individuals or corporations or a group of interest groups that gravitate to that and that feed on it and then live and by necessity have to have that connection. I mean, I think of the military-industrial complex with war, and it's surrounded, as you're saying, with the war on drugs, too. And
don't forget that the prison-industrial complex now. You have a weird confluence of...
Absolutely. You got all these more, well, usually rural communities or whatever that are hurting for jobs, and you know they really want to get those prisons by their town, so they can.
In a large part of it's rural white communities, kind of they're locking up, you know, urban blacks.
Mostly urban blacks, isn't that true? Absolutely.
Let me remind your listeners too that to give a little plug for my organization, LEAP, a lot more information can be found at our website, which is LEAP, L-E-A-P, and for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. LEAP.cc is the website. And we welcome everyone to join. Even non-law enforcement can join as a friend of LEAP. And it's free, and we don't spam at all, and we don't share a membership list.
Great.
There's everyone to... We also have speakers available that can come out to your organization and give a presentation for drug legalization. And there's a phone number to be called in Boston, and that is 781-393-6985.
Why don't you give that one more time?
781-393-6985.
Okay, very good.
Website is leap.cc.
I don't know if you could answer this or not, but if you had to guess, what percentage of law enforcement that you know would be, let's say first just inclined to change the direction of the drug war, and then maybe and what percentage ultimately would actually be in favor of total legalization?
I am sad to report that most law enforcement does not support legalization at all. I gave out surveys when I was a police officer in Baltimore, and I was just asking about liberalizing marijuana laws, and even that, but the majority of police officers are against it. Police officers they've been sold the war on drugs for too long, I think. That being said, there are more law enforcement officials. There is a significant minority of law enforcement officials who have sort of looked at the issue and wised up a bit. And that's what our organization, LEAP, is about. It's all former police officers, prosecutors, judges, and a few current ones who are very brave, who realize the failure of the war on drugs. But I think, like society, it does require a little education. So that's why it's good to have shows like yours.
Why do you think you've come to different conclusions than your fellow colleagues on the police force? What is it that got you? That's a difficult question. Maybe I'm just wondering how we could maybe learn to educate the police. I mean, if we could get the police in some good numbers to recognize what's going on, maybe we'd make a great inroad in changing the direction of drug policy.
There are a couple ways. I mean, part of my realization did start in Amsterdam. I lived there and did research on the police in Amsterdam before I was a police officer in Baltimore. And so I did know there was another way. Police officers, well, in general, they're not the most intellectual group. They don't travel that much. You know, just sort of expanding your horizons a bit and seeing an alternative, because they're just unaware of Amsterdam, except with an image of a cesspool of drugs and prostitution. But there are also more concrete things you could do in this country. You could realize that the damage from drugs, when people talk about drug-related homicides, it's not that users are smoking up and shooting each other. Now, that hardly ever happens. 80 to 90% of drug-related homicides are related to the drug trade.
Right.
Just drug users using drug dealers, either fighting for turf. Or, I mean, they're not nice people. Don't get me wrong.
What other way there is there to adjudicate their disputes? They can't go to the courts.
They can't go to the courts. That's exactly it. So I think when you present these basic arguments to law enforcement and others, then you quickly see sort of a light go on in their eyes, and they kind of go, oh, yeah, that does make sense. So it's analyzing the issue a bit. And it's accepting the fact that yes, drugs are bad, and yes, you still need to manage the situation better, and prohibition is not the answer.
We're talking with Peter Muskus. He's with the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition Group, which is at leap.cc. If you want to check them out on their website. The phone number here is 847-931-1410. That's 931-1410. If you have any questions, comments, observations, analyses, please give us a call. We will be back after a few messages.
Reduce children to their lowest common denominator.
57% of us are functionally illiterate.
For us, excellence is a thing of the past.
We killed the teachers and students at Columbine.
We are all trained to follow orders good.
We have learned to be tolerant of all people, except whites, Christians, and males.
27% of us are put on drugs.
The rest of us take the illegal ones.
Two-thirds of us believe that from each according to his ability to each according to his need is part of the preamble to the U.S. Constitution.
7 out of 10 of us don't know either of the senators in our state.
We just placed 19 out of 21 countries on math scores, ahead of the Ivory Coast and Sri Lanka.
We elected Bill Clinton as president
and re-elected him.
And 9 out of 10 of us are products of the public school.
This message paid for by the Illinois Indoctrinators Association.
Ever think that you should be getting more out of your computer? Maybe you need a go-to tech guy. A go-to tech guy is somebody who knows computers inside and out and can help you with yours. Josh Spazieri is a real go-to tech guy. Josh Spazieri is a 20-year tech veteran who can help you get more out of your computer. Need email or internet setup and training? Call John. Want to simply learn to do things faster? Call John. Josh Spazieri comes to your home, works with you one-on-one on your machine, and shows you step-by-step how to do things you've always wanted to do with your computer. Want a new computer system set up? Call John. Need fast, convenient repairs? Call John. Call John Spazieri at area code 630-858-6933. That's 630-858-6933. John Spazieri. Make him your go-to tech guy. I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through a jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
Yeah.
All right, we are back with Freedom Rings. I'm Kenneth John. We're talking with Peter Moskus, who is with the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And I'd like to open up the phone to you folks if you have any questions, comments, or observations. And we do have Walter. Hello, Walter. You're on the air.
Yeah, Ken. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
All right, good. No, I just wanted to say to Peter that I really appreciate the work that he's doing. I first got informed about LEAP when we had Sheriff Masters talk to us, and I have a lot of respect for Sheriff Masters, Peter. I don't know. Do you know him?
I don't personally.
Okay. He's a sheriff out of Colorado.
Telluride. And his book actually mentioned that what you were talking about before is that, because it's actually called Drug War Addiction, and that it seems like so much of law enforcement now is actually addicted to the war itself and the money and the power and I guess everything else that goes along with it. That's why I'm wondering. I mean, I think we need something, I don't know, some sort of kickstart, because every time a law enforcement member actually comes out against the war on drugs, that seems to be a great shot in the arm. But on the other, I mean, I don't know, I need something to jumpstart that whole thing to point out, you know, that it's really the money and the power that goes with it. That seems to drive law enforcement to continually want to keep up this war.
Well, there isn't. I mean, there are many. The drug forfeiture laws that, especially smaller law enforcement agencies are addicted to. And this is money that is taken from people on the suspicion of being drug money, but it doesn't. You don't have to go through the traditional court process to seize the money. So law enforcement, your budget's based on this continuing influx of drug money. And much of that money is dirty drug money, but not all of it. And that's part of the problem with the war on drugs. Another significant problem is that because police are so focused on drugs, it turns the citizens of drug areas against police. I mean, it's ironic that those neighborhoods where people most need police protection, those neighborhoods that are most ravaged by drug violence, usually are the most anti-police neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And the reason is because police officers are somewhat indiscriminately enforcing or fighting this war on drugs, and it affects a lot of people who aren't involved in drugs.
There's a lot of collateral damage out there, huh?
That's exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's the policy of those who believe in the huge use of force. Don't understand whether it be, again, I'm going to generalize it, whether it be in the drug war or wars were perpetrated throughout the globe, for some reason these people who believe in force, like the neocon types, they just disregard all this so-called I just lost my term.
Collateral
damage.
Yeah.
And what the collateral damage does is it builds recruits, whether it's recruits into the drug war, I mean drug community, or recruits against, you know, Islamic extremist recruits.
And just like, you know, Republican chicken hawks who start war in wars and don't have any of their sons or daughter actually serving and fighting in these wars.
Yes.
The people who make drug policy in this country, they don't live in East Baltimore. They don't live in neighborhoods that are, you know, in the south and west sides of Chicago.
Good point.
Those are communities that don't have much power and say in government. And the people making the drug laws don't have to deal with the damage.
Well, white hypocrisy.
It's easy for, you know, white suburban Republicans to, they're worried that their daughter, you know, I see movies and like Traffic, and are worried that their cute daughter is going to go to the ghetto and get addicted to heroin. But that's not the issue. That's fiction.
Yeah,
I think essentially. The real damage is for poor drug ravaged communities, and there are plenty in Chicago.
And you're throwing to a great extent black young males in the prison, and where is the family base in the future to bring up children properly?
Well, and for those who, it attempts to be more of a conservative critique, but those who blame culture and say there's something, you know, screwed up about ghetto culture, and there are elements of truth to that. But that could also be changed by legalizing drugs. Part of the what makes the culture screwed up is that it's tough to get by, especially if you're uneducated and poor and black living in on the west side of Chicago. The people who do have, and most drug dealers are not getting that rich, but still, that is the most viable economy. That's the
It keeps the heck out of working for McDonald's for $6 an hour or whatever.
Yeah, but the irony is there is a lot of money in drugs, but most of it goes only to the few at the top. The average guy standing on the corner, and there have been some good recent studies looking at this, the average guy standing on the corner swinging isn't even making minimum wage. And there's no paid vacation, and there's a very high risk of death. So there's something, there is a bit of the glamour and the bling-bling lifestyle that is what is appealing to a lot of inner-city youth. And in the abstract, a lot of white suburban youth, too, but they're not getting shot over it.
Walter, any other points you'd like to make?
No, just that, you know, I really appreciate the work that you're doing on this. You know, I mean, I guess we just need to get more people kind of a little bit more involved, and I just wanted to say that I appreciate you saying, you know, that we don't need the diversions of like, you know, okay, medical marijuana and all that, that you know, we really need to come out strong and say, you know, it's legalization that's going to help solve this problem.
And if marijuana were decriminalized or legalized in this country, I mean, that is the largest groundswell of support against the war on drugs, but once that happened, I mean, every stoner in the nation would be, you know, sitting on their couch eating potato chips.
Right.
These people we need on our side. Exactly.
And utopian pizza.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
You bet.
Appreciate it. Yeah. All right. We've got Bob on the line. Hello, Bob.
Hi there. You know, the abortion is an issue that revolves around a woman owning her body, and I think anybody that's pro-abortion has to be realizing that the same applies to drugs. It seems like one's self-ownership is primary in our view, and abortion is an indication of that, I guess, although...
Well, one could argue, you know,
that
you're talking one or two human beings there, but I get your point, Bob.
Yeah, that obviously kills an unborn child, so... It would seem it would slant more, you know, towards the drug legalization issue. But there was an article yesterday in the Herald about the methamphetamine proliferation in these Midwestern states. And the county sheriffs are being just deluged with new prisoners who have been, you know, arrested on methamphetamine charges. And one sheriff indicated the last sentence in the article was, you know, we should be putting people in jail that we're afraid of, but not people that we're mad at. And, you know, that very simple statement says a lot, because most of these people we're not really afraid of, we're just mad at them.
It's not what our prisons were built for.
No, well, yeah, why we're spending, what is it, I don't know, $55,000 a year or more to incarcerate a person just because they want to self-medicate themselves, I don't get it. I just don't get it. But I think when you say, you know, it's the continuation of this, the progressive moralists or whatever who were in favor of alcohol prohibition, and it's just, some people just like to control other people's lives, I guess. I don't know. It seems like they like to play God.
They believe they know better. But it's ironic because history has proven them wrong many times.
Over and over and over again. Bob, any other points?
Actually, I just wanted to mention that the John Birch Society is having a Free Trade Areas of the Americas speech this weekend on Friday at the Lindner Center in Lombard. So I invite people to come to that.
Where's that at?
That's
in Lombard.
That's at 660 East Butterfield Road in Lombard.
Okay, what time?
7:30.
7:30, and this is again on the
Free Trade Areas of the Americas.
Okay.
So I appreciate your time.
All right, thanks a lot, Bob. I appreciate it. Okay, and we have John. Hello, John.
Hello, Ken. Peter,
you're saying that street corner drug dealers in poor areas aren't even making a minimum wage. What's their incentive to do it?
Well, the incentive is more than nothing. Is part of the answer. Their incentive is a lifestyle. They're around money. They suddenly get laid more. You know, women admire drug dealers. That's going to encourage guys to deal drugs. There's a matter of peer pressure. Your friends are doing it. There's an element of danger. I mean, certainly a more interesting lifestyle than if you're not dealing drugs. But again, it often ends in death. And also, the difference between a drug dealer and a junkie is usually just a matter of time. Most drug users at some point sell drugs.
So they're funding their habit.
Drug dealers end up using drugs. It's not such a clear-cut distinction between the dealer and the user.
Okay, so I'm getting the impression that you're saying most of the drug money that is being made on the illicit market is leaving the country?
No, I didn't say that. At some point, you know, except for marijuana, the drugs, you know, come from other countries. Most of the drug money and drug organizations goes to people higher up. They're not going to be the people on the street. It's more of what are considered the kingpin. It's like the classic mob organization. There are bosses, and they're making a lot of money. And that boss may just control a few corners, may control a dozen street corners. But that person is reaping most of the profits from the street-level drug trade. What he then does with the money, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, yeah. The thing is that during alcohol prohibition, most of the money stayed in this country with organized crime families, whether they be ethnic or otherwise. And we're still living with some of that stuff because they didn't know what to do with the money except to invest in legitimate business.
Well, if anything, that provides a role model. I mean, the Kennedy family, their roots are in drug dealing, with a bootlegging at the time.
But we're still living with them.
They made their money off the merchandise.
These families are just heavily into corporate ownership.
Johnny, suggesting that a president we're going to have in 20 or 30 years is going to be named Gonzalez or Hernandez or something like that?
And that's a possibility.
Not a Lane cartel or something.
I mean, if the money is staying in this country, I mean, they have to be investing it or doing something to make more money with it. I mean, you just can't just stack up money and run a vault someplace.
And they're businesses to launder money.